Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. It is Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester. We are glad to be here with you on this Monday. We've got Jalen Thompson, our Royals insider, coming up later this hour to help us navigate that Marlins series and look ahead to tonight's debut game against the Cubs. Should be a fun series for the Royals. We'll get to that as we make our way through. We've got to talk some of the aftershocks in the TBT. An exciting weekend. They looked really good last night. A lot of these new faces sort of leading the way. Scottie Scheffler gets another tip of the cap in his career. We'll get into, you know, his resume up at this point. He's starting to sniff Tiger territory. So we'll get into all of that. It's all What's on Tap, brought to you by Wichita Brewing Company, WBC, Delano's debut brew, Hatfield's Mama, German Kolsch with a clean, crisp character, smooth and refreshing. Make history with Hatfield's Mama, Wichita Brewing Company, Delano's debut brew. It's available at all three of the Wichita Brewing Company brew pubs. We come back, Tommy. Let's go into the Royals briefly on the Marlins series, and we'll get more in depth with Jalen Thompson in a little bit, and then we'll get to TBT and a little British Open Championship in the next segment. So, look, that was disappointing to lose 2-3 to Miami. They are now 5.5 games back of the wild card. I would tell you, though, that I was at least pleased that in two of those three games offensively, they looked pretty good. You know, the first game, it took them a minute, but to come all the way back and then you lose it at the end, which is really, really disappointing. It gets into the extra innings thing, which I really am sick of the extra inning ghost runner thing. I'm so over it. It's fine. It's the same rules for everybody. I just don't think we need it anymore because the games are moving fast enough. I think we can just play them as normal. I hate that it's putting these relievers. Like, I feel terrible for these relievers that have to get out there and inherit a runner at second with nobody out. Anywho, they lose. And so now they lose 2-3 in a series. We really needed to see them win 2-3. But, you know, the remedy to that's pretty simple. Now you win the Cubs series when maybe we didn't expect them to win the Cubs series, and they're right back where they wanted to be.
Yeah, the one thing about the Marlins is that they've got nothing to lose. They're out of a playoff hunt, and they're kind of starting to gel, and they're having fun. I mean, you watch them, and it's like, hey, they're kind of like the Bad News Bears out there. So it's kind of fun to watch them, but they were playing free and easy, where you could definitely tell that the expectation and the pressure were on the shoulders of the Royals. You now go and play a Cubs team that they do have pressure on their shoulders. And so I wonder how that will change the way that that series plays out. But for the Marlins, I mean, in that series, yeah, it's rough when you've got Estevez on Friday not be able to get it done, and then Urcig on Saturday not be able to get it done. Those are your two anchors in the back end of the bullpen. But at the same time, on Saturday's game, they weren't able to score any runs, and you have to play pretty near perfect to be able to win a game like 1-0 or something like that. So the margin wasn't there on Saturday, but at least it was a nice bounce back yesterday. They've got to start winning series, though. They've got to start with this series against the Cubs. You've got the Guardians later this week, so you've got, you know, an interdivisional matchup between these two teams, and so you've got to take advantage of those situations when they come up. I'm hopeful that the way that their offense came alive on both Friday and Sunday, that can be carried on, you know, throughout the course of this week.
Yeah, I that's the thing. Like, had they not scored any runs in that series, I would be having a very different conversation here this morning, but they did, and it didn't go their way on the road, and that's okay because they did. The offense continues to show us signs of life.
Salvi specifically showing signs of life. I mean, he's got that power back, which is really important.
He's back. He is back. Like, he looks normal now. Jack Caglione had a couple of really nice at bats. He took one the other way finally, which has been a problem for him because pitchers are just continue to pitch him away. That was a good sign. And again, like, those are the things realistically now when we talk about the deadline, those are the things that are going to have to make the offense better. By the way, Eugenio Suarez, who we've mentioned, has hit like 6 home runs since we left the air. So that ain't going to happen. That's not happening.
Did you know that there has never, I found this out from Jeff Passan on social media over the weekend. There's never been a player that has been traded mid-season when that player has 35 home runs or more. Like that just doesn't happen. And he now is over 35 home runs. I think doesn't he only trail Judge and Raleigh in home runs?
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure.
Ohtani. He's the National League. Yeah, he's the National League leader. I saw that. I saw another article that said he may be like this may be putting them into a mode where they don't want to sell anymore. Like they feel like they can contend now. So it's like, all right. But either way, it ain't happening for the Royals. Like that's a no. That's a non-factor. They're not going to get him now. I can't. I mean, just like, and you know, quick aside, betting. You want to know the one game he didn't hit two home runs in that series?
The one game that you bet on?
He was the last leg. I had a three-leg home run parlay, Tommy. So I went to a concert on Friday, and I forgot that I made the bet. I like to do that when there's like free bets or bonus bets or get your money back bets. I love doing home run parlays because the odds are outrageous. Like they're insane, right? So I don't remember who the first two legs are. I think it was Junior Caminero and Byron Buxton. And they hit, and I'm at that concert, and I look, and I'm like, oh, crap, on my $5 bet. Like, there was, like, a $55 cash-out option on it. And I looked at one of my buddies who also likes to bet, and he was like, I think you got to take that. And I'm like, yeah, I probably should. Eugenio Suarez hadn't started his game. He was the last leg to win a bunch of money. And I'm like, yeah, I probably should. Didn't think it, like, totally forgot about it, spaced out after the concert. I'm like, oh, crap, I forgot to cash that out. And I look, and he didn't hit one. And then that knife got twisted a little bit more when I see he hit two in each of the next two games. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. That would have been one of my favorite hits of the year. A three-leg home run. Go put three home runs together and look at what the odds are so stupid to hit those. But anyway, Suarez. He's not going to be a Royal. He's not going to be a Royal.
He will not.
I don't think anybody else.
He's going to continue to be a Diamondback, I would imagine.
Oh, boy. How far back are they?
They're back to 500. I think they swept the Cardinals.
They're back to 500, 4.5 back. What are they in? Their division is, and that's for the, man, they'd be 8 back of the Dodgers. Not quite. Yeah, 8 back of the Dodgers. A lot of baseball to play. He's kind of like Lugo. Honestly, like he's the hitting version of Lugo. Like you go on the market and you instantly have probably the most desirable player. They're both essentially rentals. What do? You're a contending team. You're a contending team with the most desirable assets on the market who are both rental players. And you're both small market teams. Like in the Royals are far more small market than the Diamondbacks, certainly. But what do? It's a tough call. It's a tough call. And now they face one as well. And the answer, and we'll talk to Jalen Thompson about this, to me is very clearly, you play out almost every game until you hit that trade deadline and you just see what you've got and you see what kind of offers come in. I think you very quietly say, hey, you can send your best offer. Like, I don't know what we're going to do, but if you're interested, send us your best offer. We're going to see how the next 2 weeks play and we may take it. So I don't think there's anything else for the Royals to do. I don't think that I want to see them go be aggressive and add players right now. I don't think I want to see that either. I don't want to see him trade him. I just want him to play the next 2 weeks and we'll see. But
yeah, it wouldn't surprise me one bit if Piccolo hangs out until the very last second to make these decisions, especially with a guy like Lugo. Yeah, I think that's what you have to do. I don't think you go and you make these moves right now.
Unless the only one that you would do that for is if somebody blew your socks off for Lugo, which probably isn't going to happen yet. So that's the only outlier to why that wouldn't be the play to me. Like the only reason is if somebody just got outrageous with their Lugo offer, in which case you wouldn't want them to accidentally go trade for somebody else if they were willing to give up those kinds of assets. Other than that, yeah, I mean, like, what are you doing? If like you got to just sit and wait because all this whole wild card is fascinating, and I've seen some of the national guys are like taking a step back to how wild and how much fun this season has been with the parity and everything. But we're talking about what will the Royals play? They'll play another. I mean, goodness, Tommy, before it's July 31st. Do they finish the Atlanta series before the deadline?
They do.
Or is
yeah.
it the 30th? So they basically 9 more games. You want to talk about what could happen if you go 7-2 or 2-7, like, which are totally reasonable. The whole thing could turn upside down based on what a handful of teams do here. It's going to be those games were a little too like I could feel the Royals pressing because I could feel it. I'm like, oh, like everything feels like it's so like these feel like playoff games. Like, I don't know what you can do to loosen that. Probably nothing. But it's a tough spot.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think you hang out until the very last second because, like you said, like I think it's conceivable the Royals could go 7-2 in the next 9. They could also go 2-7 or 1-8. Like it's just been wild swings. So I think unless you get an offer for like Seth Lugo that blows you away, you have to wait until the last second.
Yeah, we'll get with Jalen Thompson, see if he's reading the same thing. When we come back, though, we got a lot of other headlines to get to. We'll do it next. Sports Daily.
Okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody, here to Sports Daily. We're glad to be with you. The Summer Concert Series back in Wichita at Navsker Park this weekend. Series returns Friday, July 25th with the Astronauts live on stage. Gates open at 6:30. Show starts at 8. Enjoy free live music, food trucks, and Friday night fun all summer long. Full schedule at kfhradio.com. We welcome you back in here. We've got a little golf to talk about. We've got some TBT to talk about, Tommy. And you tell me there's some conference news that we need to be paying attention to here.
Yeah, it's nothing major, but Ross Dellinger from Yahoo Sports reported about 30 minutes ago that the American Athletic Conference is changing its name. Dropping the word athletic out of it. So it will just be the American Conference. You won't call it the AAC anymore. It'll be the American Conference or the American. They're trying to modernize the name of the conference.
Yeah,
They've got a new mascot that they are unveiling, an eagle that is the conference mascot. And so Tim Pernetti and his team, apparently they've been meeting for a long time to try to work on the branding and the vision for the conference. So it's no longer the AAC, no longer the American Athletic Conference. It will just be known as the American Conference moving forward.
The American Conference. Yeah, I like it. It's what we call it anyway, the American. The logo's not changing, which I wouldn't advise them to do. I like the logo. But yeah, that's good. It's better than the AAC. I've always thought the AAC and the ACC were too close anyway. So I think this is better. The American, I like it. I like it. Now they need to get a big fat TV deal and, you know, the Shockers dominate the league and all these things. Speaking of the Shockers, Tommy, the Aftershocks, did you watch any of the game last night?
I did. I watched quite a bit of it. It was a fun game. Aftershocks looked really good.
They looked really good. And it's so funny because, you know, we expected Marcus Keene to be really good. And last night it was Nike Sibande, who really kind of lit it up a little bit, 22 off the bench. They brought up a good point on the broadcast. I guess in college, he was the ACC's sixth man of the year one time. So that's kind of a role he's familiar with. Taylor Eldridge reported last night that Connor Frankamp was a little nicked up. So they were just kind of taking it easy with him. But I'll tell you, Team AL, or Challenge ALS, that's one of those teams that are always in this thing. So, and you could see them make their run. and the Aftershocks took that run, took it blow for blow, and then put on the gas at the end of the game again and turned it into a really big win. And now they'll play the Houston team, Forever Cougs, who are the top seed, but they'll play it in Wichita. They had a big win also. They've looked really good in this tournament. And that'll be Tuesday night at Coke Arena. So if you're looking for something to do, Marcus McDuffie after the game, I saw challenge the fans a little bit. I'll be honest. I thought from what I could see on TV, and I didn't see the attendance number, I thought that was a good crowd. I thought the crowd looked fine.
Yeah, it was a good crowd, I think, from what I could see on TV. I don't think it was a great crowd.
And it's not one of those that they've set records with in this tournament. But there are fewer Shockers on the team and no KUK State this year. I think that was a very fine crowd.
And McDuffie actually did just post about 10 minutes ago on X talking about how it would be great if, you know, more fans came out for the game on Tuesday, home field advantage. We know about the way that the TBT is kind of changing things a little bit to where depending on who sells the most tickets up to a certain point, then you get that home court advantage. And so, you know, McDuffie's kind of taken that lead role, I think, to be kind of the spokesman of this team to try to get the fans rallied and get them out to Coke Arena.
Well, they need to, because you've got the potential here. If I understand it correctly, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, if they can do the attendance thing and win, they would potentially in that next game, believe it's the next one, get K-State or KU. Because that's who's K-State and KU are playing in that KC region, which beating them in attendance is going to be a challenge if they're playing each other for the first time up there. I would say that task is going to be large to outdraw them collectively, which is I hope that I'm reading that right on the bracket, but I think that's the scenario that is out there right now.
I think so too. It's going to be a challenge. I think considering that you've got those two teams facing off against each other, I think the good news would be that at least if, let's just say, Wichita does not get the home court advantage, at least we're talking about a relatively short drive up the road to Kansas City, as opposed to getting on a plane, right? So
Yeah, let me look at this. Okay, so if I'm looking at the bracket, they're actually a round behind. So the winner of that game will then have to play one more. So they're not yet to the point the Aftershocks are. They each just won their opening games. Now they have to play, but they would still have another one. So there's still a chance that if Wichita State wins their next game, they would not play, which is kind of a bummer. But it's not still going to, because the ticket sales are collective, right? From the way you understand it, like it's a total regional ticket sales to see who hosts.
I believe so, yes.
So you still face the burden of those two playing each other at any point, because that's going to go into the total pool. So yeah, that challenge still exists. And you're right. The travel would be much easier if they just all had to drive up the street basically to go play that game. But Wichita can do it. It's a Tuesday night. It's 8:00. I don't think there's anything else major going on around. It's a little trickier because it's not quite as many Shockers. But man, the reality is these dudes are good. Like these guys are a well-oiled unit. Some of these veterans of this tournament, they looked really good.
Well, and we're not talking about tickets that are, you know, $50 or $100 or, you know, more expensive. Like they start at like $10. You know, so especially on a Tuesday night when it's like 100 degrees outside, I mean, I don't think there's anything better than when there's not a whole lot else going on and it's really, really hot outside to go grab a $10 ticket and go to Coke Arena to watch basketball.
Yeah, I might look at that myself, actually. Maybe take the kids or something. That'd be fun. It's an 8:00 tip. So be ready to, you know, be ready to get after it. They'll need it. You got to get there first. People have said, you know, this might be their best chance to win this thing. And I think they've had some really good teams. Those first two rounds, they've at least looked as impressive, let's call it, as they ever have. I think they got a shot. I don't know what the odds are right now. Maybe the odds came up. I was going to try and bet them last night, but when I looked, they weren't listed yet. But it'd be cool if you could find like an odds to win the tournament, like a TBT futures odds. I don't think it's out there, but I think they'd be as good as anybody. They've got all those. They've got all these guys that have done this so many times, including their own players. Right now, at this point, Marcus McDuffie and Rashard Kelly and Connor Frankham, like, they're grizzled veterans of this tournament too. Like, everybody involved, it feels like, with them knows what it's going to take to win something like this. It's $1 million for these dudes. That's dang cool.
That's become the narrative this season that I think everybody has talked about. Even the TV broadcast last night, they were discussing it. Zach Bush, when he was on our program, discussed it about how enjoy this team as it is right now, because it's going to be harder and harder to keep it together as the years go on. Because as you mentioned, McDuffie, Kelly, Frankamp, like, those guys are getting older. And how much longer can you keep the current iteration of this team together and productive and winning games? And so, you know, the fact that we've seen fewer and fewer shockers on the team, I think tells you that it's becoming harder to be as productive, because you've got guys that are getting older. They've got other things that are going on, like, whatever. Yeah. So get out and enjoy it now, because it's going to be difficult, I would imagine, in a couple of years from now to have a team that is as successful as we've seen this group of players be.
And who's the next wave? Because guys just haven't been around that. I mean, it's probably Xavier Bell. I don't know who the next wave of guys who might be interested in playing this would even be, because guys are in and out of the program so quickly now. I will tell you that tonight, tonight at 8 o'clock is Purple Rain, JHX Hoops, Jayhawks. The KU alumni team is a 4.5-point favorite. I didn't watch either of them play their opening round, so I'm not, I don't have a lot of insight there. The Aftershocks are 1.5-point favorites against Forever Cougs. So for what that's worth, the Aftershocks are a slight home favorite, nominal, if you wanted to take it. Maybe we will tomorrow. We'll look into that. But it was good. All right, the other big event, the Open Championship, the British Open. Scottie Scheffler gets the win. Scottie Scheffler and Tiger's parallels thus far in their careers are really oddly eerily close. Like, somebody put up the number of days was the exact same to win the number of majors, and like, it's getting to the point where we clearly have our best shot at the next one of these, the next Tiger. He's not going to have the same impact on the game of golf as Tiger did. But if we never thought we were going to see another Tiger, another guy come in and just dominate, we're seeing it right now. Like, Scheffler is doing that.
Well, and now we're on Grand Slam watch for him too. I mean, he's one leg away from completing the career Grand Slam. He needs a U.S. Open. He's got everything else. He's got a couple green jackets. He's got PGA championships. Now he's got the Open Championship. Most recently, it was Rory McIlroy finally getting his green jacket and completing his career Grand Slam. But there's only a handful of guys in the history of the game that have done all of those, have won all of those tournaments. And so now we kind of shift our eyes to that for Scottie Scheffler going in to 2026. And the U.S. Open is always incredibly difficult, but that's really where things stand now for him. As far as the number of wins and the way he dominates fields, he just doesn't make mistakes. And you and I talk about that a lot whenever we talk about Scottie Scheffler. He's kind of like, I saw this comparison on social media, and actually I think it rings really true. Scottie Scheffler is the Tim Duncan of golf. Like, he's so dominant in what he does, but he's so low-key. You know, he's not flashy.
That's a good comp.
I think that's a great comp because he just kind of goes about his business and keeps his head down. It was interesting that he made the comments before the tournament about how, winning is not all that fulfilling for him and everything. And then he goes out and blows away the field. And you kind of watch him and you're like, man, like, I'm sure he is happy about this, but how much longer will this happiness actually last for him? Because that's really not the priority for Scottie Scheffler. So he's fun to watch just because of the way that he plays. But from a personality standpoint, he doesn't have like that fire that Tiger had for so long. And that's okay. No, that's not the way that he plays.
It also doesn't feel like he just absolutely kills people the way Tiger did. Scheffler seems insurmountable. Tiger seemed like an actual tiger, right? Like, he seemed like he was out hunting people. Scheffler just He just Duncan is one of the greatest comps I've ever heard.
I agree.
He is very Tim Duncan. He's going to do his thing. Personality wise. Yeah. I like his I think his personality is great because these other guys, like, you can't get mad at him. Like, Tiger was demonstrative. You could get mad at Tiger. That was fine. Like, Scheffler's just out there doing his thing, man. It's
yeah. There was a moment, I think it was on Saturday, and I was watching the coverage, and he had the lead going into the weekend, and you're thinking, like, yeah, there's no way he's going to give this up because that's just what he does. And he played pretty well. And then I think it was like, I don't know, I might be getting this wrong, but hole number 7, hole number 8, something like that. And he hit a really terrible iron shot into the thick stuff. And you're like, all right, well, this is an opportunity now for the rest of the field to catch him. And he's going to drop a shot, maybe two. He didn't. He was able to chip up onto the green and make the putt for par. You know, and so he just, even when he makes mistakes, he doesn't compound those mistakes. And I mean, he's just the guy, you said insurmountable. I think inevitable is a good word for him too. Once you give him the lead, he's never going to give it back.
What is it about his game? Cause I don't pay close enough attention. Cause he doesn't have the most distance or anything off the tee. Does he?
Like, I don't know. He's not the longest in the world. He's not a Bryson DeChambeau, you know, or anybody like that. He doesn't take unnecessary risks. He's not going after pins. He's not, you know, he's just like, get it on the green and, you know, like, minimize the mistakes that you make.
Is he a great putter? Cause he's still got to score these holes.
He's a good putter. He's an all around great player. Like, there's really not anything, at least from what I can tell about him, that is head and shoulders better, like one area of the game. It's just everything is locked in and solid.
And then he never makes the mistake.
Correct.
Right? Like, you can't put up the big numbers if you're not the best at something, I can't imagine. But it's that combined with the fact that
it's a running joke that when, you know, amateurs like you and I go out and play golf, like, oh, fairways and greens like that. But that's really, truly like the case. Like, if you can keep it in the fairway and you can hit your green, then you're not making mistakes and you're going to score.
And avoid four putts.
And avoiding four putts is probably pretty important. Yeah.
When you're talking about my game's gotten so much better everywhere else. And then I four putt.
Yeah. I got to tell you though, like, coming out of that Open Championship win for Scottie Scheffler, it gets me that much more excited for the Ryder Cup. Because you're going to have, obviously, Scotty anchoring the team. Keegan Bradley said today Bryson DeChambeau is going to be on the team. Like, it's going to be it's going to be a lot of fun, I think, for the Ryder Cup.
Heck yeah, with Gary Woodland as a coach.
Yeah,
You know, for our local tie, that's the other thing. That's really cool. But yeah, he gets it done again. He wasn't even worth betting. What did we joke about Friday when he was like 5 strokes off the lead? You could get him at 2-1 to win the dang thing. I mean, that ain't good.
You're never going to get good odds on Scottie Scheffler. Just not the way it's going to work.
Yeah, man. All right. Elsewhere, headlines around the sports world. I think I said earlier, the Lions lose an offensive lineman. There's a defensive lineman. We were talking about offensive linemen, but they lose after last year too. They've got to have such shell shock from that. After they lost Hendrickson. So, they start in the hole. That was a pretty big headline there. We just look around. The Cowboys are in the news a little bit because of the Parsons deal and compared. I told you what I thought about that. I think the Cowboys should trade Parsons. Not this year. When is he a free agent? Like, I'm so sick of talking about the Micah Parsons contract, and then we see the J.J. Watt contract, and I'm like, what? Like, you can't do that. You can't do that deal. Jerry Jones bumbled that from the beginning. He's not a free agent. He's got an option this year. He's making $24 million, and then he's a free agent next year. I think if you're going to trade him, you'd have to trade him right now. I haven't heard that as a possibility, but I would do it if I was Dallas. I would do it. Like, I just,
I mean,
if
what's
you don't,
what's
you
the
really
most,
are yeah. all in for this year.
What's the most likely scenario? They're not. I don't think they're going to trade him. Whether or not they should, that's a different debate. But they're not going to trade him. I think that he ends up walking in free.
Paid.
I think he's going to walk in free agency because Jerry's not going to write him that big of a check. He'll walk in free agency when that time goes.
Jerry always caves
for that kind of money. I have a hard time thinking that's going to happen.
Look at what he just did for CeeDee Lamb and Dak Prescott. I mean, he always caves.
That's a lot of money for Micah Parsons. Like, that's a reset the market type thing.
He times these poorly. That's what he does. Like, he gives guys contracts too early and then misses the opportunity to get out ahead of a deal like the Chiefs just did with Karlaftis. Now, Parsons would have been more expensive at the time than Karlaftis was, but you still could have avoided. I mean, waiting is going to cost them, if they end up re-signing him, waiting is going to cost them $15 to $20 million a year.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
But they've got people saying Super Bowl or bust, which of course they should say Super Bowl or bust, but they've got to come up with a plan. They're going to be an interesting watch this year, because this is the first time. When do you ever remember them not getting like any love before a season ever?
They always get so much love.
I feel like people are acting like they're going to be bad. They're not going to be bad. They're just not going to be good enough, but they're not going to be bad. Like, what are people seeing that make you think that they're going to be a terrible team? I don't get it. I could be missing something. Man, I don't get it at all. I think they're going to be fine. I think they're going to be what they always are. They're not going to be bad. They're going to win games where you're like, wow, that was impressive. And then they'll, lose in the first round of the playoffs probably.
And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
We are joined by our Royals insider, Jalen Thompson, here on the program on this Monday for our weekly Royals chat. Jalen, it was a weekend for the Royals in Miami where they lose two of three games to the Marlins. But really, I think there are some positives to take away. In two of those three games, the bats came alive, but there were definitely some issues with the back end of that bullpen. What were your major takeaways from the weekend series against the Marlins?
I think that they had to win on Sunday to really generate any positive momentum coming out of the All-Star break, because you just can't come out of the All-Star break and lose two games against the Miami Marlins. You just that just can't happen, right? If you're trying to make a postseason run. And for them to win on Sunday is a good sign for them going into this series this week against the Chicago Cubs at Wrigley Field. Two night games and a day game. It's pretty rare to have night games at Wrigley. So for them, this is a big stage playing against a team that has one of the best records in the league to really showcase what are they going to do? Who are they going to be? If you get swept in Chicago, now you're seven games under and the trade deadline is 10 days away. So I think that's a big sign that they won on Sunday. And I think that Salvador Perez coming back and getting into form, he has six home runs in his last 10 games. I think that's also a big sign for them in the offense as well.
Well, I was going to ask you, is there any room, Jalen, for optimism in a series like that when in two of the games the offense really produced well? Is that, do they have time and room to be optimistic about that, or is it just win at all costs, don't really pay attention to anything else?
When I look at that series against the Marlins, I think that you can have some optimism, but also look at who they face pitching-wise. You face Sandy Alcantara, who is a former Cy Young winner, all-star, but he hasn't been himself this year. And so you got seven runs basically off of him. And then you face a young guy in Jansen Junk on Sunday, which you hit around, but you didn't hit around until you saw him about another time through a lineup. But that game against on Saturday, Cal Quantrill, you faced him before and he's owned you and he owned you again. So it's like the offense, you can have some optimism, but you need to see it more consistently. You need to, if they go to Chicago and they hit the Cubs pitching and they make a statement, then I think you can have some optimism. But for right now, I don't know if you can.
I think one area, at least offensively, that, I think is important to take a look at is the way that Salvador Perez has come out over the last month or so. He had really struggled early on in the season. The average was relatively low. The power wasn't quite there the way that we had expected. But he's really, at least in the last few weeks or so, it seems like that power has come back. What are you seeing from him?
Yeah, I think so, too. Just from watching him at the plate, Tommy, he's not swinging at some of those early pitches that would be down and away out of the zone like he was earlier this season. Now he's kind of locked in. He's kind of refocused. He said he's been working on some things with the hitting coaches, and I think he's kind of just got his scope back together, for lack of a better word, where Now he's zeroing in on pitches that are in the strike zone, and that's allowing him to drive the baseball. Also, I think with it being the summertime as well, the balls are flying out of different parks and venues. So that also helps as he's hitting line drives. I mean, he's scolding the baseball with every at bat that he's coming up at the plate. So he's in a real groove right now.
He is in a groove. Is Cags coming? I saw he took one the other way, which is a big step for him.
Yeah.
He's got to play through it, although they did sit him the other night. Like, what are we feeling? What's the vibe with him? I don't know that I would. This is just like pure speculation. Like, his body language, he seems sometimes a little bit defeated. Is he hanging in there from what you're hearing? Like, at, you know, in his mental state?
No, he's hanging in there. He's doing everything he can, and he's pretty much fine as it comes to, you know, dealing with navigating a rookie season. It's not always going the way he wants to go at the plate, but, you know, he continues to work hard each and every day. And the defensive part is, I think, what a lot of people in that clubhouse is really happy and really glad to see come around. He's playing really well in right field. Yeah, he's going to have his some lapses, but that's every rookie as they're trying to navigate different stadiums and, you know, trying to learn the outfield. But like you mentioned, Jacob, hitting the ball the other way, I think that's a big sign for him. The reason why he didn't play on Saturday against Kyle Quantrill is because he has a reverse split, so he's really tough on left-handers, but right-handers hit him very well. So I think that's the reason why they didn't put him in the lineup. If you notice that, they went pretty much all right-handers in that lineup that day. Outside of Vinny Pasquantino. So I think if you look at what they're trying to do with Cags, they're going to continue to work with him. I think he's going to come around. Like I said, he just needs more bats. And the more bats you get, the more you learn different pitchers and the more you can be successful.
We got to talk about the back end of the bullpen a little bit here, Jalen. So Friday night, Estevez struggled. Saturday night, Ercig struggled. Is there any room for like major concern for those guys as we move forward?
I don't think so. I think with relievers, you're going to have nights where they're not going to be on. It's just the nature of the beast trying to come out and pitch 65 to 70 appearances a season and try to hold down a lead or protect the lead or whatever it may be. The Royals have to score runs. If they score runs, then you can sustain and absorb those nights where they maybe aren't at their sharpest. But the world's bullpen always comes into games where the margin is so razor thin and so airtight that they have to really be on and be perfect for every pitch. And that's just not going to happen each and every time out. So the only way that you can alleviate some of those bullpen lapses that you're seeing is by scoring runs and scoring early. And the Royals, they just have not shown that they can do that consistently. Like you guys mentioned, one day they score seven, the other day they score one. And they score seven again. So they have to find a way to drive some runs in. It's no secret they are one of the worst scoring offensive teams in franchise history. And that's just where we are at. And it's not early. It's getting pretty much late now. So they have to figure out a way to fix this offense if they want to go anywhere near the playoffs.
Hopefully it's not too late. Jalen Thompson, Royals beat reporter for the KC Star. So let's talk about the deadline. Lugo is the elephant in the room. I don't know that there's urgency to do anything. I also don't know that they need to add anything to really change their trajectory. They either play better or they don't. Lugo's the one guy.
Yeah.
What is the thought with Lugo right now? Everybody's going to want him. I know he's just a rental, but what's the thought there from what you're hearing?
I think the Royals are at a point where they don't want to move him, but I also believe that they have to decide what this season is going to be. So, like I mentioned earlier, if they go and play Chicago and they get swept and they're seven games back and you're 6 days away from the trade deadline, are you willing to make that move and say, you know what? The season is not going the way we want it, and let's just get something for Seth Lugo. Or do you win some games in Chicago, come back home, maybe a game under 500 if you sweep, and then you're like, we're in this, let's go. So I think this series, this week, I believe, is really going to be important for the Royals because you have Chicago, then you have Cleveland, and then you got Atlanta. and then you got the trade deadline. So for Seth Lugo's case, I'm sure they're getting offers. I'm sure everyone is wants to add him to his rotation, to their rotation. I'll even throw in Carlos Estevez too, because what's the point of having a closer if you're gonna be out of the playoff race? You can get something back for that as well. So I think this is the week. But Seth Lugo seems like he has to be traded, because you're paying him $15 million regardless if he opts into the player option. And if he doesn't, you're paying him more. Do you really want to have that in your starting rotation when you're already paying Michael Wacha and you're going to have to pay Cole Reagans again and things of that nature down the road?
I know that obviously they were able to salvage the series with a win yesterday, but do you get the sense that they're pressing? Because I think that that's kind of been off and on. Like sometimes during the season, they've looked that way visibly. Other times they haven't. I got the sense that at least in the opening two games, that especially on Saturday when the offense wasn't coming along for them, that they were pressing a little bit. And I would imagine going into a series against the Cubs, it's going to be really difficult to not feel like they're pressing also. But you contrast that with the way the Marlins played, and they're free and loose and they've got nothing to lose. You know, like you could just really tell the difference between the two teams.
Yeah, I think so. I won't say that they are pressing, because I don't get that sense from them. But I do think there are moments where they feel like someone has to get it done. And it kind of matriculates through the whole lineup, where guys will maybe change or alter a little bit in their plate appearance, where they might swing for the fences, or they might try to, you know, really get this run in and it doesn't happen. I think we saw that a lot on Saturday, but on Sunday, they just went with the pitch. Like, you saw John India double, you saw Bobby double, then Salvi doubles, and then Jack drives him in, and it looks like the Royals offense, right? So they have to figure out a way to do that more often. And I just don't know if they can do that with the Cubs you're going to throw at them this week, and just what else is going to be down the pipeline. They have a good schedule to come back and do some things, but is this offense really strong enough to do it?
We'll find out. Two games in that series, they scored runs. They didn't win them both. Pregame coverage begins here tonight at 7 o'clock of Royals-Cubs. An interesting series. I got kind of excited about getting the Cubs in. I haven't seen a lot of this Cubs team that's so good.
They're really good.
Jalen, we'll follow your work at the KC Star, at Jalen Thompson on X. We appreciate it. Buckle up. It's these next couple of weeks are going to be tight.
Yes, sir. Thank you guys for having me. See you guys soon.
There goes Jalen Thompson. Cubs are good, Tommy. Cubs are real good. They're going to have to score. I cannot. this has been a difficult year to just like handicap for the Royals. They have so many players you like, and they just cannot, outside of one brief stretch this year, string it together. We'll see. We'll see if the offense from the Marlins series translates. But yeah, Jalen's point is good. That was the Marlins pitching, which hasn't been very good this year.
So you're going to get Noah Cameron on the hill tonight for the Royals, and
we still don't know who's starting tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know what kind of run support Noah Cameron's going to get either. That's been the name of the game for him in his rookie season, pitching really, really well, getting very little run support. So hopefully that changes tonight.
That's been the thing for like all of them, but especially Noah Cameron. I'm excited for these games. I really am. Like they're fun to lock into, but man, are they intense when they're not winning, right? Like they're pretty.
They're maddening. They're just frustrating.
It's just like an anxiety level with sports. Like, come on, just score some runs. It just gets there. But Salvi will help. Look, it's been a fine year. Not good enough yet. Hopefully it can get there and we'll just follow along here. I still, no matter what happens over these next couple of weeks, they are, you know, they're still going to have another month to play, really 2 months to play. And as tight as things are, you just never know. So I just don't want Royals fans to like lose hope, because this whole thing can turn upside down over the course of 3 weeks. All right, Tommy, that'll do it for us today. Thanks to Jalen Thompson for hopping in. If you missed anything from the show today, a lot to cover on this show today. You can go back and listen on the Odyssey app, the iHeartRadio app. It's all there for you. tomorrow. We'll dig into some of this a little bit more, including with the Chiefs. Felix Johnson, our Chiefs insider. Boy, it's been a little slow on Chiefs news. Not anymore. We got a lot to talk about since the last time we talked to Felix Johnson. New deals for Smith and Karlaftis and a Rice suspension, so that'll be a fun conversation.
Yeah, I got some injuries to talk about. Camp in St. Joe continues, so we've got a lot to get to tomorrow on the program.
We got Royals baseball tonight, 7 o'clock. We'll have the recap tomorrow. For Max, for Tommy, I'm Jacob. See you then.